This is Northbrook Works, and I'm Hazel Kahn, introducing you to another of my interesting, unusual North Fork neighbors. Today I welcome Billy Hands, auto mechanic and garage owner, poet, and more.
I've been very involved in the community. Small North Fork town of Orient is like a large family. It's an extended family. I have been involved with the local school. I enjoy small town politics. My time with being on the Board of Education, also teaching Little League baseball, staying involved with the kids, the next generation of our community, is huge as far as I'm concerned.
You feel a responsibility towards
the next generation? I absolutely do. I'm not going anywhere. I've pretty much decided that I will be where I am until I cease to be. And I'd like to give as much into the community as I can.
Were you actually born on the North Fork?
I was not. I was born in North Jersey. My parents were born and raised in Rutherford, and my father's job had him traveling quite a bit, and we traveled with him as well. So when he retired, we moved out to what was our summer home on the North Fork. His grandparents had actually summered in New Suffolk, and his parents then summered in Orient, and that's pretty much how the whole thing went.
So when did you actually become a full-time resident of the North Fork?
I graduated high school in 1981 from a town in New Jersey, and following that, 2 days after I graduated high school, I literally moved out to the summer home by myself, and I had decided to go to Southampton College for writing and literature. That's pretty much that. After college, I bounced around with different jobs or different thoughts of different jobs. Through everything, through high school, summers, and through college, I was working at the gas station where I still find myself right now.
But now you own it.
Correct.
How did that happen?
After school, after college, and the idea of looking for different places to work and to live, I pretty much decided that I did not want to be in a city. And I had fallen in love with Orient when I was a boy. And the fella that I was working for at the gas station had decided to sell. I didn't have the money to buy it. So I contacted my father, who was in New Jersey at the time. And we just tried to work something out with his financial backing and his business skills and my knowledge of the town and auto mechanics. That's how we started it in August of 87.
So you've talked about the teaching, education thing, now the auto. How did the poetry happen? I mean, have you always written poetry? Have you always thought of yourself as a poet?
Think of myself as a poet now, yes. Have I always thought of myself as a poet? No. It started with an English teacher in seventh grade, and he was one of these very creative, somewhat off-centered people, and I fell in love with the guy. I thought he was just fantastic, and he had us writing poetry in class, and I had written something, and he gave me the pat on the back. I don't know if it was that good, but he did give me the encouragement to continue. And over the course of years, I would continue to write, maybe send things out to get rejected. But it would only help me polish my craft. And actually, it wasn't until about 7 years ago that I started to write pieces where I found my voice, where I would read something and I would say, yeah, that sounds like a Billy Hands poem. And that's not something that you can just hunt for. It just happens. So now when I read it, it sounds like me. That's probably one of the greatest things in the world, where I'll read something and I'll say, yeah, that sounds like a Billy Hands poem.
And can you say what that is? How would I recognize a Billy Hands poem?
I guess you would have to listen to a number of them and you'd see the connection. I'm heavily influenced by Emily Dickinson, Edgar Allan Poe, 19th century poets. I like rhyme. I think I got away from rhyme for a while when I was younger because I thought, well, maybe rhyme was a little too Ogdenatius, a little too Dr. Seuss. But that's how I write. And so now I've worked on using more slant rhymes or just using more analogies.
Is there anything going on in your mind right now? Any lines burbling in your mind that you've written and that you might want to illustrate what you just said with?
Always. I usually get stuck on a topic. I was on a death poetry kick for about 15 or 18 months. Had absorbed myself with Sylvia Plath. When I put myself into it, I found that I was writing more about death as part of life, not writing about death as far as just death, like we think of it or know it as a
finality. Yeah.
Correct. So I went through that for about 15 months and wrote some decent pieces and wrote some crappy pieces. But I had to. And now I'm dealing with time right now, as far as making the best of your time, if you want to do something, to do it, but not to miss. You can live in the moment and not be careless. So you have to be careful what you do. You can't let people get hurt just because you want to do something. Yet on the other hand, you can't miss the opportunities that come to you. So it's a balancing act.
So does that relate to death?
No. I think that relates to life and living. And you need to live your life, but it's just like there's two sides of my brain. There's the side that fixes cars. Okay, fix this. And then there is the side that is more like a dream, the poetry side, a dream within a dream. And somehow I struggle with melding the two together, but they do overlap, and they have to overlap.
How do they overlap?
If everything every day were 9 to 5 and just your regular boilerplate, regular frame that you had to stay inside of, that's a pretty boring life. Yet on the other hand, if you get outside of that frame, you can do that, but you can't be careless. So auto mechanics grounds me.
Well, you have to be careful when you're an auto mechanic, right? It's a very precise business.
Yes.
Profession.
Yes. So I mix the two together. There's a pad that's in my third drawer down in the center of one of my toolboxes. And it does happen that I'll be in the middle of something, grease all over my hands, and I'll get a line and I'll have to write it down.
Can you remember the last time that happened or what the line was?
Yesterday, Sunday, I wrote a piece. I had something running through my head, and if I don't write it down, things come at me constantly. So if I don't write it down, I will forget it. And I construct a poem instead of writing it. My process is a little different, where I have all these little pieces. My mind is in a certain area, and I have all these little pieces, and I collect the pieces, and I put them together, and then that's how I create the poem.
But the pieces are lines or phrases that you've written down separately. You don't know that they're going to connect them?
If my mind is in a certain area for a certain period of time, there is always a connection with the lines. What drives me crazy is if my head's in two places at once, then I've got completely different lines. And that's why you write and rewrite, because then you realize, hey, wait a minute, this doesn't belong here. This belongs in that piece over there.
I don't know which English poet it was, and I can't believe I'm being literary here, but whoever said, sudden a thought came like a full-blown rose, that is what you experience, or is it?
It does happen. I'll get the thought, but I won't have all the words. I'll sit down and write a poem, flat out. I've written short pieces just flat out. I've written long pieces. I just wrote a love poem 2 weeks ago called Green and Dying, which I sat down and just wrote. It's only 12 lines. And on the rewrite, I changed two words, and that was it. It was done. Other pieces literally take me weeks to do, and I struggle with the words.
You do everything in a book or longhand, or do you use a computer too?
I don't use the computer until almost final. The notes go in a small journal.
Do you have it with you there?
I do, or pieces of paper that are stuck in the journal, you know, just scribbled like this, a line here, a line there.
It's very neat. Your handwriting is very Tidy. You know, I know that you perform with the Hidden City Orchestra. And I know that the last performance they did was at the gazebo in Southold.
Right.
And I was told that you did a very short poem, almost like a haiku. I don't know if it actually was a haiku.
That was that love poem. That was Green and Dying.
Okay. And that when it was over, you walked out and were never seen again.
Right.
So what was that? I mean, and the person who told me about it said that you have this impeccable sense of timing.
Sure. Green. I'll read you that piece. That was Green and Dying. And I, again, we were talking about this earlier. A lot of times you feel that being an artist, whether you're doing your leafages or you're acting or doing a painting or a poem, I think you always have to strive to do better. I think it's important for yourself. Consequently, you have to feel that the last thing that you created was your best work. And you're always trying to top what you did last, or you're always trying to just do a little bit better. So I had written a piece once called The Last Poem I Wrote, which was about that. It was the best poem I wrote. So the last poem that I have completed was a piece called Green and Dying, and I did perform that with the Hidden City.
And you do think it's the best thing you've ever done? Or have you written something since?
Well, you just had some bits and pieces of the story where I dreamt about you. So that's in the creative process right now, if you will. You asked about the piece from the Hidden City show, and I have to tell you that the Hidden City Orchestra, what they do is they let me ride on their coattails.
Describe who they are.
It's their show. George Cork Maule is the conductor, keyboardist, and pretty much organizer of the Hidden City shows. Doug Baldwin, right now, is the guitarist, and Terry Keevil, who is just an unbelievable master. He plays wind instrument, duduk. Just absolutely fantastic. These three gentlemen, now the Hidden City has gone through numerous transitions. There are times where the Hidden City Orchestra will show up and there will be 12 people.
They've been very, very good to me as far as allowing me to jump on center stage with them and almost letting me do my thing in the middle of their performance. I owe them a great deal for that.
So that's you, the poet performer, and then there's you, the poet, scribbling in your little books.
Right.
Those are two different things.
Right.
You're listening to WPKN 89.5 Bridgeport and to Billy Hands talking about how he works and lives on the North Fork of the East End of Long Island.
The Hidden City has helped me a great deal with performance poetry. And as you mentioned at the show at the gazebo a couple of Wednesdays ago, after I finished reading a last piece, you made the comment you heard that I just walked off stage and disappeared into the darkness.
And that this was a manifestation of your perfect, impeccable sense of timing. So my feeling was, oh, so you said your bit and there was nothing more to do, so you left.
I had said my bit, and there was nothing more to do, and I would have liked to have stayed. But part of my other life, my real life as well, is my daughter was finishing a dance class in Cutchogue.
So something very mundane crept in here.
Right. Well, real life crept in, and it crossed the line with the art life. But something I was discussing with you earlier today, it's very important to live in the moment and not be careless, not be so consumed with, I just want to do this. You have to remember everything.
You have to remember where you are and who you are.
Correct.
At the same time as you're being a poet, you have to remember that you're a father and an auto mechanic and a North Fork resident.
Correct. That's probably been the most difficult part. I know it sounds well, how difficult can it be? But I can't stop writing poetry. I can't stop performing. And I can't stop being a North Fork resident, a business owner, and a father. So it's difficult. Just once in a while, you know, I just have to smack myself in the back of the head and say, okay, Billy, look, you know, you have to do this.
So what is it more like? Is it a matter of integration or balancing act or?
It's both.
Or focus?
I don't have much focus.
But you must if you keep all these things going.
It's a busy card. It really is. And I've been very careful not to involve myself in something if I can't involve myself 100%. Where if somebody would ask me, would you like to join this community group for one reason or another? If I'm going to join that group, I'm not going to do it halfway. I'm going to go in head first. So if it means that the writing takes a back seat for 6 months, or if it means I can't put the business on hold for 6 months, because the business and my time there, that's a necessity for life. And even if I'm not performing a new poem, I still need to write. So even if I'm doing that in the darkness of my office for 30 minutes at night, the arts group on the North Fork, everybody is intertwined somehow.
Why is that?
Just
because it's a small place? Or?
I think because it's a small place. I also think that the people are very supportive.
Of each other?
Absolutely. I don't think that if I'm going to... I'm doing a reading the first week of October at Peconic Landing, and the director there has asked me to get other readers. I am looking for other readers that I like, that read really well, and that I want to have a good performance with everybody. I don't want to stand out from the crowd at that performance. I want everybody to do their best, and we're supporting each other. So you start to think about something like that. Who could I bring in that would do a really good job and would sound great in this venue? That's what you want to do.
So there's an absent, less competition maybe somehow?
I don't think that anybody wants to make anybody look bad. And it's the same with the auto business. So many people tell me up west about cutthroat gas stations.
You should explain where Orient is, because not everybody knows who's listening to the station.
If we did not have the causeway on the east end of East Marion, Orient would be an island. We're surrounded by water on three sides very easily and connected to the west side with the causeway.
It's sort of the end, the really
it
is the
end.
End of Long Island.
That's where it stops. But the same thing, as I was saying, with the repair shops. Mm-hmm. I would not hesitate to call a repair shop in Cutchogue or in Matatuck that I'm friends with and ask one of the technicians there, or call a dealership. And they wouldn't hesitate to give me an answer. We're not trying to make each other look bad. We're trying to help each other. My grandfather told me there's enough food in the trough not to be a pig. There's enough for everybody.
Let me ask you something else. Earlier on, you were talking about getting feedback about your poetry. I'm just really interested in the idea of feedback. I don't think, you said you know, people will tell you whether it's garbage or whether it's really good, right? And so on. I think that, personally, that people don't feedback to each other enough. But you told me that one of the performances you did with the Hidden Cities Orchestra,
right,
was saying, you are us, we are you, kind of thing.
Right.
Is that about feedback? I mean...
Absolutely. That was Corky's idea. Corky came up with that, and he kind of threw me the ball and said, okay, run. But his idea was, we have met the audience and they are us. And it's very important for a performer, a writer, paintings, whatever, you've been in the same place that the audience is in. And sometimes the best thing about what you create is the reaction of the person who is listening or watching. And you feed off of that. So then it's this whole role reversal of who's on stage. Is the audience on stage, or is the person on stage actually on stage? So it works both ways.
you know, when you were talking about the North Fork and your workplace, you also at some other stage told me that it is a gathering place, that people gather there. Is it just because, they're having their car fixed and waiting, or other things?
Both. I mean, it's funny you mentioned that. Yesterday, which was a Sunday, beautiful day, the doors were open. And at one point in time, I'm standing out front by the gas pumps, and I turned around, and there are five friends of mine in the shop, talking to each other, standing around. The one guy's standing by the door, and he smiles at me, and he says, "You know, Billy, I can't think of any place I'd rather be right now." What a great feeling. I wasn't working on his car. He stopped down. His mother lives in town. He lives in Southold. He stopped down to see his mom. And he's standing there, and you could just see on his face, what a spot to be, just standing there.
But it's also, again, you know, we talked about that your friend said you wear all the characters. You know, I mean, there's a lot of wakes going on all the time on the North Fork because it is an older population.
Sure.
So people do die
all
the time. I mean, I sometimes look at the younger generations and I think, gosh, a lot of these people are so bland. They're so homogeneous. They all look alike. They talk the same way.
Right.
They've all got a certain kind of hair and clothes. You know, I think, oh God, I'm glad I don't have to have these as my peers growing up. I'm glad I lived in more interesting places.
But they'll change too, hopefully. Hopefully. But what you said is funny. It was a couple of years ago, I made the comment to somebody, a buddy of mine that I grew up with. And I said that to him. I said, remember all the old timers? He said, yeah. I said, remember such and such, this farmer who did this, or this mechanic who's like this? They were characters. You know, I said, where are they all now? And he looks at me and he says, well, that's us. We're the characters. And I said, come on. You know, because we're standing inside of our own selves, you know, so we don't always take a step out and look at ourselves. I just recently figured that I was middle age.
When does middle age start?
I think 50.
Is that how old you are?
Almost. But I'll be 50 this winter. And somebody said to me, we're middle-aged people.
I realized I'd been so intrigued by Billy talking about his poetry that I hadn't asked him enough about his work as an auto mechanic. So I emailed him to ask, what do you like best about fixing cars? Here's what he replied. What I like best about fixing cars, he said, is to take something that doesn't run, doesn't move, or doesn't even grunt and make it happen. There are few greater feelings in life than to be needed and making people happy. I get the opportunity every day to give people the freedom that they know as their transportation, which turns into their ability to just go. Go where they want with the help from me. It's a good feeling. The garage, as I call it, is known as Orient Service Center. I thought. It takes a poet to write like this about fixing cars. So back to Billy and his poetry. You mentioned before a book that you had, Marry a Girl with Money. What
right.
is that?
Two books. Both books' titles came from things that my grandfather used to say. Marry a Girl with Money, You'll Learn to Love Her. And the opening poem in Marry a Girl with Money is a poem called Grandpa and Buttermilk. And the dedication page in that book is for Grandpa. He was a musician, a philosopher, a writer, and just a great inspiration. The first book, which is called You Can't Trade Up, the photography in that book was done by a guy who worked for me at the gas station. And he was traveling, and he took pictures, and I used his photos in the first chapbook, You Can't Trade Up.
Have you been selling the books?
You Can't Trade Up did much better than I had anticipated. That went through three printings, and I think a lot of it was a curiosity thing. Marry a Girl, I think, is much better, format-wise, appearance-wise, and everything. So that had a larger run of copies, and that book was at the Montauk Lighthouse, Burton's Books in Greenport, again, keeping everything locally at the gas station, the East End Arts Council, It can be found at your local stores.
So your plans for another one?
Yes, documenting the future. I have enough material for the next book, but I'm just trying to fine-tune what I'm writing right now and make sure, again, that I put the best thing out there that I possibly can. The poems I've been fortunate, Long Island Quarterly, Kayak out in California, you know, different small publications, Avatar.
So is there anything else that you would like to tell me or that I should have asked you? Or
the North Fork is also very influential in everything in the books that you read. I write a lot about water, not ocean as much as I write about the creeks and Halleck's Bay in Orient. And I make the connection quite a bit between tides and life and that sort of thing. Mm. There's a lot of water and nature in my love poems. Water seems to be a reoccurring theme. I guess that kind of makes sense. I certainly wouldn't be writing about the desert. And that comes up in a lot of the poems. Green and Dying. This was the piece that you had asked me about from the show at the gazebo in Southold.
We should imagine you standing outside.
Right.
Around this gazebo area.
Right.
100 people, 75 people sitting on chairs.
Or blankets or what have you.
It's a very nice North Fork event in the summer.
And it's just, again, community members not getting paid, donating their time to bring a band there, bring a performance group there like the Hidden City Orchestra, an improv performance group.
So we'll imagine you and it's getting dark, maybe?
It was dark at this point in time. It was about 8:45, and that's why I had to disappear as quickly as I did.
Right, and so we'll imagine that on a lovely, balm summer evening.
It was a nice night.
And you're standing out there. Okay.
Green and Dying. Back to thinking again. Back to wondering again. Back to putting my forehead in the palm of my hand. To be chained apart, panting, and crying, green and dying, by the edge of the pool. Still the only thing that I'll regret, having remembered more than I'll forget, through all the suspense and all the surprise, I fail to recall the color of your eyes.
Lovely, lovely. Thank you very much. It was great.
Thanks.
So thank you, Billy.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Billy Hands.
It was a joy.
I don't know if people want to get in touch with you, they just go to your garage, right?
I have a website.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Just go to billyhands.com. It's got a number of the poems on the website. And on the last page of the website is contact information. So you can send me an email and through my website.
Okay.
And Corky and I have done some performance pieces that are on ReverbNation.com. And we're scattered about YouTube and those sorts of things as well.
But searching on your name will bring up some of those things.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. I appreciate it. Thanks.
That was Billy Hands, auto mechanic, poet, and North Fork resident, talking about how he works and lives on the North Fork of the East End of Long Island. North Fork Works is heard on the first Wednesday of every month at 7:30 p.m., right after Free Speech Radio News on WPKN 89.5 FM, streaming and archived on WPKN.org, and available on hazelkahn.com. North Fork Works is produced by Tony Ernst.